Is that you or the dog?
That's me. Sorry.
Are you panting?
Oh, no, that's the dog, yeah.
Sorry, okay.
Dog. I'm also eating pizza.
I feel like you're a cheese pizza guy.
Sausage.
That would have been my second guess.
Yep, or cheese. One of the two. That's it.
Interesting.
I'll do pepperoni if I have to, but what's funny is that I actually like eating pepperoni on its own, usually with like a cheese pairing, because I'm classy like that.
What are you, like a sharp cheddar kind of individual?
Manchego.
You don't even know what that is.
What a fucking bet I don't.
Tell me more.
I like manchego. It's my favorite cheese of all the cheeses. I don't know why.
Where's it come from? Always joined...
Spain.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was like the one cheese I used to like try with the old, the woman that ruined my life. The wine and cheese tastings and pairings and all this. And like Manchego was always the one that seemed to stand out. Like it was cheesy, obviously, but it's very dry. Had a lot of flavor to it, but it wasn't overwhelming, very subtle. I always really, I'm kind of getting a taste for it now. I bet that'd be way better than the DiGiorno pizza that I'm eating, which I've now reheated for the third time.
Wow, that's gross. Manchego is actually made from sheep's milk.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know that.
I know everything about Manchego.
Welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. My name is Matt. That cheese-loving fool is Michael Coughlin.
If you want to know somebody that loves cheese, my brother fucking is obsessed with cheese.
Yeah, I like a good charcuterie board every once in a while.
That's more than just cheese, though.
Yeah, it's got like meats and stuff, yeah. But yeah, it's got cheese, nuts, all sorts of crap.
I love ordering that at a restaurant with a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And like, I'll go sometimes to like this one place with my friend, and she'll get like a beer and wings. I get a glass of wine and the charcuterie board.
It's okay. It sounds like an interesting restaurant you're going to.
It's kind of like, I haven't actually been there in a long time. It's called the Brick House. It had like young women, like tight shirts, kind of like, they kind of show off their tits, but not really. It was like a nicer Hooters, but that type of place, like they're selling a little cheesecake, but I think they're really advertising for that, like, after work crowd, lonely, middle-aged white guy. Like, kind of what I am, almost.
Mm.
But, yeah.
This past Saturday, we had UFC Fight Night, Geechee versus Vic, coming from Lincoln, Nebraska at the Pinnacle Bank Arena. Attendance was 6,409, with a total gate of $478,337. Josh Neer was not impressed. In the main event, we had Justin Gaethje defeating James Vick by knockout at a minute 27 of the first. Big win here for Gaethje. It gets him a win. He didn't want to lose three in a row. Exciting fight for the 90 seconds it lasted. Gaethje, again, took some shots, was eating leg kicks to the body, and eventually managed to land a shot up against the cage and just knocked Vick out cold. Like, he was dead. Just limp, sack of potatoes, fall down, out of it afterwards for several minutes, didn't know where he was, that sort of thing. But an emphatic win for Gaethje, and he got to do the backflip off the top of the cage.
It was crazy.
Okay.
I mean, the fucking punch he hit him with, it wasn't like this big thudding blow or anything like that. It was a good punch and all. But when it first hit, I'm like, oh, I can see that might knock you out, but it seemed almost like one of those equilibrium knockouts. But then Vic just wasn't fucking moving at all.
He was dead.
I mean, you don't see guys get knocked out like that very often in MMA. Like, boxing maybe a little bit more, but usually guys go down, they kind of turtle up. Or like, there was somebody earlier in the show I was watching, he just kind of like, you could see him turtle up. And it's like, he quit. Like, you pansy-ass motherfucker. Who, you're not a real dude at all, bitch. But James Vic went out like a man, yo.
I was happy for Gaethje. I don't like to see him take a beating and not get a win, so he'll be around in the UFC for a few more fights, which is good for everybody.
Yeah, well, maybe not his health, but the rest of us.
Our entertainment, yes. He was talking about when he signs his new contract, he doesn't want a win bonus. He says he's proven himself at this point and just deserves a flat deal. He gets paid what he gets paid because you know you're going to get an awesome fight with him.
I think that's actually fair. Like, the theory behind a win bonus is to incentivize guys, you know, fight harder.
Right.
Well, yeah, Gaethje's, he's a fucking nut job. He doesn't need an incentive. Now, he's kind of getting like a win bonus anyways because he's always getting a bonus. But, yeah, I get it. Makes sense.
Yeah, he won a performance of the night tonight, so, or Saturday night anyway. So he got an extra $50,000 plus his win bonus. So Gaethje got paid here. Tough loss for Vic. This is the biggest fight of his career, first main event, and now he's back to the drawing board.
Yeah. I mean, he just, it was weird how big he looked in there. He was so much bigger than Gaethje that all I could think of is if Vic wins, it's just going to be the should Gaethje drop down to 145 talk or some shit like that. But instead, this big scarecrow looking motherfucker just got dropped. Like, kind of like when Stefan Struve would get knocked out. You just be like, oh, some people go out hard.
In the co-main event, semi-main event, Michael Johnson defeated Andre Touchy-Feely by split decision 29-28, 27-30, and 29-28. Feely was not happy about the decision, and afterwards, he wrote on Instagram, "I won that fight, plain and simple. My preparation was perfect, and my performance was superior. The universe provides challenges and rewards us for the way we react to and navigate through them. All I'm going to keep focusing on is what I can control. I'm hungrier than ever, and I'll be back better than ever. Thank you to everyone who has my back. I love y'all. With that said, Michael Johnson, you hit like a bitch and you act like a bitch. I'm ready to crack it off anytime."
Gotta crack it off. Crack it off. I mean, come on. Who talks like this? This is a guy that just went full hood for a bit there. But seriously, like, your pro fight, you hit like a bitch. You lost the fight, all right? Even if you, say you'd won, would you have really been walking around thinking, yeah, man, I'm a fucking badass. I won this split decision. Like, come on. It's a fight. Get over it. Also, he's got the, I don't like Touchy-Feely at all. His whole physical appearance bothers me. And when I was watching him fight, I actually specifically thought in my head, I don't like the way he looks, and I know people are going to think I shouldn't judge him for it, but he's got those big fucking holes in his ear, and the tattoo on the neck bugs the fuck out of me. But especially when guys have, like, a tattoo on the neck, but, like, a really nice and cropped haircut. Like, oh, yeah, you want to make sure that you present a clean-cut image to the world there, Mr. Neck Tattoo.
Prior to that, we had another fight with Courtney Casey defeating Angela Hill by split decision 30-27, 28-29, and 29-28. That sounds like a close fight to me.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I can't. There's something about Angela Hill. She has always just like, I don't know. She can't get it together. She doesn't seem like a Vitor Belfort necessarily, but she's got all this talent. She seems like she should be better. Maybe she's not in the right weight class or whatever. I don't know.
Get it together. Get your shit together.
She should be better.
Less time on Twitter, more time in the gym, maybe.
Yeah, or, you know, get in the gym for a variety of reasons. Become a better fighter. Get a better body to attract a man. You know, whatever she's got to do to get by in life.
Brian Barberena defeated Jake Ellenberger by TKO at 226 of the first round. And now, fortunately, we're not going to have to see Jake Ellenberger fight anymore because he retired afterwards.
This was really bad. This was uncomfortable to watch because, like, Ellenberger came out there and it was just like, he immediately kind of like threw kicks. And you're like, oh, look at this. And Barberena, I mean, god damn. He looks like Paul Buentello. You know, he's got the same fucking physique as that fat-ass executioner motherfucker. And He just went out there and he just murdered him. He just like hit him once real hard and that was it. And then you could just see that Ellenberger is just not, he can't physically do this shit. He is gone in every sense of it. Like everywhere he gets hit in the body, it hurts, hit in the head. He's not fast. He's not reacting well. And this pudgy motherfucker just took him to Queer Street. And then he just, you know, he poppered him.
Like jalapeno poppers?
Yeah, right in the butthole.
Spicy. Davison Figueiredo defeated Jean Moraga by TKO at 308 of the second round. Figueiredo looked good. He came into this, I think, ranked 14th in the flyweight division. He just beat the shit out of Moraga. And with a body shot at towards the end of the second, just finished it with shots on the ground. Moraga was bleeding everywhere. Figueiredo looks pretty impressive so far from what I've seen from him.
Always my favorite finish, the world's toughest human beings crying in pain from their body. I just fucking will never get tired of seeing that. Yeah, I mean, the Figueiredo, the way they were talking about him, and they're kind of like, you know, at any time, if he needs to, he just go to the ground or this or that. I'm just like, man, they're really talking this guy up because, you know, Moraga's legit. He's a former title challenger, and I always felt like he was kind of a really good, like the Rich Franklin, Evan Tanner type of that division. Hopefully with a better ending, but still, I always liked him. And yeah, he got beat up by I assume Brazilian.
Yeah, he's Brazilian. He's 30 years old, 15-0 now, 4-0 in the UFC.
I like that a guy is 15-0, 4-0 in the UFC, and I'm like, I never heard of the guy. I have no idea who the fuck this is. I have no idea who he is.
Yeah. That I mean, that's the dilemma all these shows, man. It's like nobody can watch it. Even you who have like nothing going on and no prospects in life don't have time to watch 6 hours every week of UFC.
When you're right, you're right.
It says on Wikipedia here, Figueiredo worked as a bricklayer and a hairdresser before competing in MMA professionally.
Maybe hairdresser means something different in Brazil.
This is in English.
Maybe there's a weird, you know, it could be something lost in translation. You know, bricklaying, hairdresser.
Okay.
There's something, he's banging broads is what he's doing. You know, he's laying some brick and dressing their hair. Yeah.
Huh. To open the main card, we had Eric Anders defeating Tim Williams by knockout. This was a head kick at 4:42 of the third. Anders looked like the better fighter throughout here, but the finish was kind of weird because Williams was down and started to try to get back up while Anders was already on his feet. And as Williams was getting up to his feet and backing away, Eric Anders just booted him right in the face and knocked him out.
It's fucking, I hate this. It's not, this is not what the rule should fucking be. This is not the rule at all. It shouldn't be the rule. I don't think, see how anyone can really think that if a guy is a fucking downed fighter and you throw a fucking kick at his head, if his hand comes up for some reason, then it's legal. Fuck you. I hate this. Because to me, this is, it makes it, it puts a downed fighter in a really bad position because either you bring your hand up maybe to defend yourself and then the strike becomes legal, or you leave your hand down, the strike's illegal, and you get kicked in the fucking head. And I know that's not exactly what was happening here, but this happens a lot. I don't like it. I appreciate that guy's trying to game the system, but that's not what was happening here. This dude was just standing up, and the kick, to me, when you throw a fucking kick, I don't care if his fingertip barely got off the ground at the last split second. That's not how the rule is.
Right.
Like when it's like sometimes, seriously, I think sometimes these kicks lift people off the ground, sure, and everybody's just like, oh no, like his hand's not on the ground. It's like, yeah, because the fucking shin underneath his head lifted the hand off the ground.
I mean, it's weird because a lot of times in that situation, the fighter standing backs up a step and the ref waves the guy up off the mat, and that didn't happen this time. Like Williams just decided to get up and the ref didn't step in and kind of separate him. He just got up and got booted. So I don't know. It's a weird one.
Like it's your risk. I get it. You're taught how to stand up for a reason. Like it sounds dumb, but no, it's called a technical stand up. And it's something that you do in jiu-jitsu classes. It's day one. And you have to learn how to do it. Like, you do it every class to warm up. There's a way to stand up specifically to protect you in situations like this. I guess this moron didn't pay attention. Fundamentals, people. They matter.
Then we had the prelims on Fox Sports 2. James Krause defeated Warley Alves by TKO at 228 of the second.
I would have liked to watch that fight.
Oh, you don't have that FS2, that's right.
Because nobody's that fucking channel. I can't wait for ESPN. I get all of their channels. I pay for some of their shit.
My cable's so weird. I get Fox Sports 2, but not regular Fox.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre.
Oh, is that an over-the-air? Do you not get NBC and CBS also?
I get NBC, but I don't get CBS. Yeah, it's Sling. I could get – it's weird. I'm saving like over $1,000 a year. Anyway,
did you shop at Geico too?
No, I don't. What's that, insurance or something?
It was like
my wife does all that stuff. I don't know.
Oh, fuck. I fucked up the joke. Sorry. Did you also stay the Holiday Inn?
Mm-mm.
Okay. There we go. That's better.
yeah. Biggest win for Krause ever, probably. Corey Sandhagen defeated Yuri Alcantara by TKO. This fight was awesome and you should try and find it. Would be
damn it.
It was really good.
Like, what? His name is Corey what?
Sandhagen. Sand Hagen.
Yeah, that's that's not what it sounds like to me. Sounds like someone's dropping a racial slur.
Your mind is always in the gutter.
It's the times we live in.
You gotta control your own mind. Don't let other people.
The media, the mainstream media is inundated me. To always see race. I blame Anderson Cooper.
Oh, I got a tweet from Dana White saying the new tough starts now. That's exciting. Who are the coaches?
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Or was this the one with the fucking Kelvin Gastelum?
Yeah.
And
Whitaker. Bobby Knuckles.
Wow.
A lot of charisma there.
Those are two of the dullest human beings that have ever lived. I mean,
wow.
I know people say like a fountain, like a black hole of charisma and shit like that. But usually when they say that, the guy is so uncharismatic. There's just something appealing about him. Mm. These two are not. There's nothing about Whitaker. To the point where I'm sitting here and I kept thinking in my head, Forrest Whitaker is his fucking name. The guy is just dull. His fighting style is dull. Great fighter. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but just talk about blending into the pavement. Wow. I don't even think that's a saying, but it is now.
Sandhagen versus Alcantara. Really good fight. Alcantara got like an armbar in the first, like almost immediately. Totally dislocated Sandhagen's elbow. He didn't care. He managed to get out of it. And Alcantara had him in a triangle. He got out of that. Then he just beat the shit out of Alcantara the rest of the fight. It was awesome. Showed like a shitload of heart. It's worth going out of your way to see. Some guy named...
I hope that fucking money they got from Fox was worth it, you assholes.
Andrew Sanchez defeated Marcus Perez. Mickey Gall, friend of halfguarded.com, defeated George Sullivan by rear naked choke at 109 of the first.
Good for you, Mickey.
Afterwards, Mickey Gall called out either Sage Northcutt for a rematch. I guess he wants to beat him again. Or... the nightmare Diego Sanchez. Those were his two call-outs.
Those are quite the call-outs. I mean, usually you don't call out guys. First of all, you don't call out guys you've already beat. That's a real weird look. Yes. Like, I just want to fight, and I don't want to fight this guy again. Could we just run this back? Like, I feel comfortable doing this one over again. Or guys that I didn't even know Diego was still alive.
He is.
How is he not dead in some sort of weird incident in the middle? Like, he's got to go the Evan Tanner route, right? He feels like he dies in the middle of the desert in New Mexico, though. Am I wrong?
Mm.
Really, if you heard that Diego Sanchez maybe got like high on peyote and just wandered around the desert and died, would you really be surprised?
No.
Exactly.
On Fight Pass, JoJo Calderwood defeated Kalindra Faria by armbar. Drew Dober defeated John Tuck by unanimous decision, and Ronnie Yaya defeated Luke Sanders with a heel hook at 131 of the first.
Ooh, I kind of want to see that.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Also, I don't know where it was. It may have been on TV. It may have been one of the announcers, but somebody was talking about how Anders was coming off of headlining his previous fight against Machida, and they're acting like, whoever it was, I think it was, it must have been the people on TV, because I'm not going to watch another shit. And they were just like kind of laughing about the idea that this asshole headlined a show, and now he opens it.
I think we kind of made fun of it last week, too.
Oh, maybe that was us then. Somebody did it.
And we should also mention the other big show this past weekend, Bare Knuckle FC 2.
Oh, yeah.
That was at the Mississippi Coast Coliseum in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Biloxi, for those of you who are foreigners out there, Biloxi is generally known as one of the premier destinations for travel and fight fans in the United States.
In the main event, Beck Rollins defeated Britton Hart via split decision 48-47, 50-45, and 49-45 to win her first ever combat
tights
sports championship.
Really? Mm-hmm. How has she not won some bullshit minor league thing before?
I don't know.
Oh, well, I mean, some people work their way up in life, you know, like some guys pay their dues and they win the little ones. And some people just go out there and they win that bare knuckle fighting championship right off the bat. And they just start at the top.
Chris Lytle defeated Drew Lipton via knockout at 118 of the first.
That's so sad.
Arnold Adams defeated Joey Beltran via TKO doctor stoppage. Beltran's eye looked very bad afterwards. I saw an interview with him. Kendall Grove defeated Bruce Ambransky via unanimous decision.
Wow, that's a big win.
Crazy Horse Bennett lost by TKO to some guy named Michael McDonald. Probably not the singer or the good fighter in Bellator.
I was going to say, not the singer or the fighter. Actually, there's a lot of fighters named Michael McDonald. There was a kickboxer for years, K1, black guy.
Hmm. I don't recognize any of these other names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that the Biloxi Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship didn't have more recognizable fighting names.
I'm shocked that there's like multiples of these cropping up now, because there's also the one that like goes in like Casper, Wyoming. I think that's a different group than the who's the guy who pissed on Jason Thacker's bed? Chris Lieben. The Chris Lieben show, because he's supposed to do bare knuckle against Baroni, but I think that's a different company. It's just weird all of a sudden in 2018 when there's all this, you know, head trauma and better drug testing and more commissions and everything else. All of a sudden bare knuckle fighting's cropping up more than it has in 20 years.
It's kind of funny too, because like it has almost the exact same appeal to people as the original UFC.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of like this is raw and real. In reality, it's the same guys we always know, and they're fighting pretty much the same way. And I don't, we live in a weird time where on the one hand, we are more coddled and protected than ever. On the other hand, there's like bare knuckle fighting happening and nobody cares. Like, seriously, like, they had a fucking congressional inquiries about this stuff once. And nowadays, everybody's just like, eh, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. That's what I'm saying. It's very odd. Floyd, the one-year anniversary of Floyd and Connor was this past week. I don't know if you celebrated.
Oh, yeah.
What'd you do?
I'm still fucking hungover. Oh, my gosh. It was just brutal. I mean, I was sitting there and I was sipping Cristal with my homies.
Some of those pressers were pretty awesome. Anyway, yesterday Floyd appeared to extend an olive branch to former opponent Conor McGregor. Talking to TMZ, Mayweather expressed an interest in both attending McGregor's upcoming title fight with Khabib and in having the Irishman spend time training at his boxing club in Vegas. This past weekend marked the one-year anniversary of Mayweather and McGregor. McGregor must have heard about Mayweather's offer because he took to Twitter on Tuesday evening to issue a response. He wrote, "Fuck the Mayweathers, except Senior and Roger. There's no peace here, kid. Step up or step down."
I mean, good for you, Connor. He knows how the game is played.
Here's the thing. Like, I think he's kind of jumped the shark, but he's still so much better than everybody else. It's kind of like when The Rock makes a comeback to WWE or something. You're like, this guy's old and kind of corny now, but he's still just so much better than everybody else. It doesn't even matter. You just roll with it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy there.
Thank you.
You'll get a raise for that.
I'm overdue.
By the way, I'm desperate to watch things right now in the background. So I'm on UFC's YouTube channel, and they're showing big fights from Dana White's Contender Series and all this stuff. And so I'm watching Greg Hardy here, and you read about this stuff, but then you watch it and you think he hit a woman.
Mm.
I mean,
a bunch of times, a lot.
Like, he is so big, mm-hmm, and so athletic and so scary.
Yeah.
The way he just kind of hones in, he like, this is a guy driven by his DNA to kill, and he's hitting a woman. Like, what an animal. And I'm saying animal because he's black.
Thanks for clarifying.
So stupid. I should have called him. I don't want to monkey this up.
Yeah, who said that? I saw something about that.
DeSantis, the Republican guy running for governor in Florida.
Oh, he's running against a black guy or something?
Yeah, the black guy just won. He's like this big socialist or whatever, like big, like Bernie Sanders type dude. And so like the guy says, I'm like, you know, we're having like all this economic success and Florida's doing really well. We don't want to elect a guy and monkey it up and do this and that. Like
so but, stupid.
Like, but it's not like, you know, kind of like, you know, that's just like, you know, when it's not like kind of like don't want to throw a monkey wrench and thing. Like,
right.
There's no way. There's no way anybody just casually drops the, oh, wait, what's this black guy just, you know, blacking it up here? Like, what? No. But so it was just kind of like a thing. So now everybody in Florida has to pretend for a day like they give a shit.
Right.
Like, it's, you know, it's just sport. It's just sport, man.
Connor also had a Instagram post last week with a picture of Khabib on the bus, like looking scared as he threw the dolly through the window. And he wrote to Khabib's dad, "I can see you cowering behind fake respect, just like your middle child, a quivering coward." So McGregor is talking shit about Khabib and his dad now. He wrote, "I have true respect for the Vanak soldier. Eye-to-eye respect. Always be aware that when respect is given out of fear, it is fake. It is the coward's safest first step towards treason." When
Wait, hold on, sir.
Yes.
Who is saying this?
Conor McGregor.
Is saying that he has respect for who?
The Vanak soldier, which is a region of the people of the Northern Caucasus.
Oh, so it's Khabib's people.
Yes. "When land is on the line, there are no limits," he continued. "So there must be no hesitation. Stand strong and stay ruthless forever and always."
Land is on the line. He knows what year it is, right? Land? You're fighting for a shiny belt, you moron. You're not fighting for the land. It's not like the Muslim horde is coming here. You're not fighting on behalf of the Pope and some sort of crusade here. You're gonna get a cage fight and all you're doing is talking shit to a dude that is going to really hurt you bad.
I hope Connor wins.
So do I. Oh, I absolutely hope he wins. I always want Connor to win.
Me too.
I want Connor to win everything because it just makes things more entertaining.
Absolutely.
Life is better because that just means that it's just one more crazy thing that Connor gets to do. We just give him a little bit more rope, which is, it's great. Something, because the thing about Connor is that I don't worry that he's going to stop. Like, Connor's going to keep, it's like Trump. He's going to keep doing things. Connor's not going to just, like, wake up one day and be like, you know what, guys, I'm done. I'm out. He's just go live quietly on the coast of Ireland or whatever and have little bastard babies or something like that. Like, no, this moron's going to, he's going to be, like, on Fox racing against a bear or something one day.
I'm trying to find this.
By the way, I was talking to somebody tonight, and I apparently don't really understand how fast things are, because I was convinced I could outrun a bee, and then, like, even a bumblebee. And then, like, I saw the bumblebee take off, and I'm just like, I was blown away by how fast it is. It was just, like, stunning to me how fast the bee was. And I was just, like, completely humbled. And then I was trying to think of, like, what animals in nature could I outrun? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if there are that many.
Turtle.
Like, that's, yeah. That was the only one I could really come up with.
Sloth.
Like,
you know,
that's not really an animal.
Oh, is, yes, it a, it is, human?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Oh, I bet, like, lots of old people, like senior citizens.
Maybe.
There's millions of, billions of things you can outrun. Small children.
I don't know about that.
Newborn puppies.
No, they'd get me. They're too cute.
Rocky could catch that chicken after he trained enough.
You know, I'm not going to train to catch a chicken.
Like,
Rocky is also a moron with, you know, CTE. And he may have raped somebody, but.
What else are slow animals?
I know, that's the thing. Like, I was thinking, like, any kind of animal, like, I would see, I'm like, no, a cat, dog, all of those are way faster than me. Cow. I was like, maybe a cow. No, cow, if a cow gets going.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Like, how about, like, worms?
No, I'm talking, like, real fucking animals here, all right? Like, not, yeah, okay, I can outrun a worm. The thing without legs. Yeah, no, like, I gotta find, like, an animal I can outrun. It's really tough.
What was that thing? Remember they used to have, like, humans versus animals?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's where this all comes from. This was on Fox, and, you know, there was a, they had the world's fastest man raced against a cheetah.
Yeah.
Not against a cheetah, against a zebra. And then they had, like, 50 midgets try to tug an airplane, which is just, like, amazing. And I'm so glad that I was alive at a time when we were allowed to just exploit midgets for our entertainment as if they weren't human beings. Like, really, I lived in a time of what will historically be seen as horrific, horrific exploitation of human beings simply because of a genetic anomaly. That's all it is. And yet, damn it, I am so happy because something's really fucking funny about 50 midgets pulling against a... they weren't just pulling an airplane. They were pulling the airplane, and on the other side was an elephant also tugging the airplane, and the elephant beat them.
I bet. Are you familiar with, I guess, is it little people now? Back in the day, it was midget bowling. You would, like, throw a midget at the bowling pins. Like, you could, like, rent a midget and pay them, like, $1,000, and you could bowl with them as your bowling ball.
I'd do it. Well, I wouldn't, actually, because I'm a kind human being, but...
Yeah, that's an odd thing to pay someone to do.
Midgets are kind of interesting. Like, everybody always thinks they're kind of fast, and, oh, they're midgets, they're like people, but they're not, but... Like, I always like the midgets who, like, totally embrace it and just, like, wee man and all them. They just go for it.
Yeah.
They're just like, yeah, man, I'm a midget. And they, and, like, everything that's awkward about it, they're like, yeah, no, this is really weird. Let's make fun of this. I was like, thank you. Cause I really, like, I have, like, 1,000 questions I want to ask you. It's like, yes. So you really buy all your clothes in the children's section? Oh, yeah.
In other UFC feuds, are you familiar with the Nate Diaz Bruce Buffer feud?
I saw, and I had no context, was Nate tweeting something like, Bruce, you like a bitch, or something like that. And I was just like, okay, Nate's mad at Bruce Buffer. I don't really need to know why. I'm sure there's a good reason.
Bruce said that Nate should be thanking the UFC and bowing to Dana White. And in response, Diaz wrote, Bruce Buffer, what the fuck? Get off the UFC nuts. You're bowing down right now. Telling me to bow down? Fuck that. You keep bowing down. I bow down to no one ever for all the money in the world.
I mean, I think Nate actually is in the right there. Who the fuck is Bruce Buffer to be telling Nate Diaz anything? I mean, it's you know, as it's been told to me, like, Bruce Buffer's so far in the closet, he doesn't even see the door. Like, the man is in, and he's not that there's anything wrong with being gay, not that a gay man needs to be extra appreciative for a job, but all you do is announce people coming to a cage.
Yeah.
That's it. Your job is to just, your job is to read about four sentences of a card. Like, he doesn't have to memorize it. They give him the stuff to read. He can cheat. And he wants to talk about Nate. Nate Diaz is a, he's a baller, man. He's the gangsta.
Here's what Buffer said. I love Nate, but he's always got a bad taste in his mouth. Nate, I heard you made $7 million or more dollars on your last fight. I don't want to hear you complaining about being underpromoted by the UFC. You should be thanking the UFC and bowing to Dana White every time you see him, Ari Emanuel, and Patrick Whitesell. You've got $7 million or more dollars gross before taxes, maybe much more, which I love knowing that you have, Nate. Please, I don't want to hear anymore.
What the fuck? That's a real aggressive posture for Bruce Buffer to be taking. Like, what? Like, what the hell? You're not management. You're not getting paid a lot. What are you doing? You should be on his side. Although Bruce is wealthy as fuck. But I mean, look, Nate doesn't owe anybody anything. He's underpaid for what the revenue he generated for that company. Oh my gosh! And they didn't promote him. Nate himself is as much of the reason for that fight. Those fights doing what they did as Connor. We saw that when Connor's next fights didn't do as big.
Bruce Buffer clarified things on Twitter, which is always a place to go and do that. With all respect, Nate, that is not what I meant by saying the word bow. I meant it as a sign of respect, as in when greeting someone, not a sign of submission, as I never expect you to do that for anyone.
Hey, dipshit, the whole bowing is a greeting for respect is because you are kind of imitating the deference position there. It's always a bitch position. That's why when Barack Obama bowed to the Saudis, it was insulting. But Trump, he just put his hand on the glowing orb and took their powers.
I forgot to mention another huge fight this past weekend that did 870,000 buys on YouTube. Logan Paul versus KSI, the two YouTubers. I believe their younger brothers fought in the co-main event.
That's the best part of this whole thing. The best part is that their younger brothers also got in on it. Like, hey, yeah, I'll fight in the undercard.
They're going to have a rematch. The first one was in, I want to say, London. And I think
Manchester.
Thank you. And the follow-up's going to be in the States somewhere. But, 800,000 people paid $10 a pop on YouTube, which is a lot of people, especially when you could just watch it on Facebook. Like, I saw it streaming on Facebook when it was happening. The fight ended in a majority draw. One of my favorite MMA minds, Brendan Schaub.
Majority draw. Majority draw. Like, seriously, after all that? And then they just had a majority draw. Come on.
Brendan Schaub, one of the greatest minds in MMA, said, I love what they are doing because they are showing how easy it is to promote a fight. When everyone goes, being a promoter is so difficult. Really? These kids have zero background. They both decided, hey, we both have a following, and they did it all their own. I'm sure they lined up with some help to acquire the arena and get the ticket sales and all that. But for the most part, two famous guys showed you how easy it is to promote and sell a fight.
Brent Schaub's one of the dumbest people in this sport. I mean, seriously, what is it? They showed how easy it is to promote something because they're popular. Like, what? Do you understand that they're popular because they're good at promoting themselves? Like, all Logan Paul does is promote himself. He has a YouTube channel with, what, like 50 bajillion people subscribed to it? Like, the man is, I don't understand it, but he's a mega celebrity. And the truth is that they did a pay-per-view, and it was on YouTube. It's probably part of YouTube Red. I'm guessing YouTube probably tried to push it or do something like that. It's real easy for his fans because they're already right there. Like, it's not – I take nothing away from them. They obviously did something. They connected. They got people to pay $10. But it's also $10. That's not that big of an outlay for these people. You know, $10 in a fight, it's because it's like a gimmick. It's not really promoting anything, and they did it one time. Brendan Schaub, I think you need to step back a bit. I don't think you know your mess with it. You know, Dana White, Last time you came at him, he came back hard.
Schaub went on, when a fight does not sell, that's when you realize how shitty a promoter is. Whenever there's two headline UFC fighters, both those guys are so fucking talented, it's not even funny. For those fights not to sell, should not rely on a fighter. That's where a promoter or the marketing business of the UFC, or name whatever boxing promoter you want, should come into play. It is not the responsibility of them being the fighters.
I do agree with that. I've actually always thought that the mark of a good promoter is to get you to pay for something that you don't really aren't really interested in. That said, there is also something to not screwing up a sure thing. And the UFC has been very good at that for the most part. And also, part of the promoter is getting the fight made. Like, that is an actual thing. And putting up the money, it's, unless I checked, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather don't fight for free. Right?
Correct.
Okay, good. Yeah. So, yeah, somebody's got to pay these guys. And in summation, Brendan Schaub was born on third base and thinks he's playing football.
He went on to suggest that it might be a good idea for UFC to sign Paul. Paul heard that suggestion and said on Twitter, "The thought of securing a fight in the UFC is exciting. Could finally use my wrestling background, but I hear some other celebrities and athletes want to catch these hands first."
Look, Brendan Schaub is proving how tough it is to be a promoter. Because a promoter has to recognize a great idea when he's got it. And Brendan Schaub's got a great idea there. He's throwing it out there as a joke. But I will tell you right now, if they took the Dana White Contender Series thing, had the same arena, but instead every week you got to watch two celebrities fight, it would reignite this company like you can't believe. Can you imagine every week guys like Logan Paul would take on T.I. or something like that? And you'd have, I don't know. You could have all kinds of stuff. Like, it'd be like the old celebrity death match, but for real. And there's just enough of these morons out there who would absolutely do it. And I think it would just be awesome. And I really, really want to see the UFC celebrity division. Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect thing that we need to have in this.
I think Logan Paul, CM Punk is the fight to make.
Seriously, why not give people this? Maybe I wouldn't pay for it, but oh, man. I'm not going to watch two random nobodies fight in the middle of fucking Nebraska, but I will absolutely watch like a guy famous for farting a lot fight a guy famous for like drinking a lot of milk or whatever you'd come up with. Like, give me the backstory. I need to feel an emotional investment in this shit. And I'm not getting it from two guys who work really hard and are nice to their families. I want somebody with a coke problem, and maybe a lot of debts they got to pay off.
UFC 228 sneaking up on us. It's not this weekend with Labor Day. It's the following weekend. But people are already concerned about Darren Till's weight. He looks rather large for a welterweight at the moment. They have Kamaru Usman as a backup fight. It's a situation.
You're telling me that the guy that missed weight by a lot last time on a short notice, quick turnaround fight is still overweight.
So they've already got Kamaru Usman as a backup, but Tyron Woodley is saying he will not fight Usman if Till misses weight. He said, "I'm chasing greatness. If Till doesn't make weight, he takes away from me the opportunity to add a fourth title defense on my resume. Whether he's 176 or 170 on the dot, he's still going to get that ass whooping."
You said you're looking for history, and if you fought Usman, you could get an actual title defense. So I think what you're trying to say, Tyron Woodley, is that you have no idea how anything in the world works, and Brendan Schaub should shut the fuck up if this is what is out there. You tell me that this moron is just a no-brainer, easy draw. The guy goes out of his way to make sure that nobody would want to watch him fight. I mean, his fights are boring, and all he does is tell people, I don't know if I'm going to do this. I'm not going to really fight anybody. I'm only going to fight this guy. So if he doesn't make weight, I'm just not going to fight. Or, like, what the hell? Why would anybody want to pay to watch you fight? You think you're that impressive? Like, anybody's really sitting there, and from a purely athletic standpoint, goes, I just got to know who the best 170-pound fighter is on the planet. No. I want to see you fight because you somebody called you the N-word and it upset you. Ooh, I like that.
Woodley went on, me and Usman will fight at some point in time, but I'm not going to fight you on under 24 hours notice. I have been training for a 6'3" striker southpaw, not a 5'10" wrestler. Negative. I'm a world champion. I deserve proper notice. I deserve proper time to prepare and train for a world title I've worked so hard for. If he wants to fight me, it's going to be a full training camp. I'll gladly take that if offered.
You're not a fighter. You're an athlete. Nobody pays to watch athletes. We pay to watch fighters. That's what it is. A fighter wouldn't say that. You want to know what Conor McGregor makes a lot more money? A big part of it is because he does fight people on 24 hours notice. And he fights really bad matchups on 24 hours notice. And he goes out of his way to encourage it. And meanwhile, Tyrone Woodley is as boring as your yawn just now.
Sorry, I didn't realize that was so loud.
I hear everything. There's a chick on Ultimate Fighter and dudes.
Maybe.
They mixed and matched them. Boy, this Maurice Green guy's a real ugly motherfucker. Ooh. Oh, his eye's got a lazy eye. I hate that. People with lazy eyes should always wear sunglasses. This fuck is so rude. I never know where to look, and it makes me so uncomfortable. I spend the whole conversation with lazy eye people trying to figure out which is the right eye just so I can look at it. And then like halfway through, I'll be like, I realize I got the wrong eye. And now I look like an asshole. So I just try to avoid them.
I'm going to be trying to avoid Tito Ortiz versus Chuck Liddell 3.
Speaking of lazy eyes.
It's official. ESPN.com today reported the fight is set for November 24th at the Forum in Inglewood, California. A price point for the fight has not yet been announced, but De La Hoya told ESPN.com he plans on becoming a regular MMA promoter now to go along with his boxing events. Ortiz first announced the possibility of a third fight with Liddell back in May, saying he would come out of retirement to give the fans a fight they've been waiting for.
So, who's Chuck said he's coming out of retirement to give the fans a fight they're looking for?
Tito
said this. So Tito is promoting Conor and Khabib. Interesting. Certainly he doesn't think that anybody in the world has been clamoring to see these two losers go at it. Although I bet it does a really good live gate. I bet it does like a $3 million live gate. Boxing guys always have big live gates because they're all running some sort of scam. And I don't want to do anything on pay-per-view unless they sell it for like $5. It gets like a million pay-per-views and then they brag. We need all these pay-per-view buys. We're bigger than Logan Paul.
It's really weird because freak show fights like that like always interest me. I don't know why. Like even like Shamrock versus Gracie and Bellator a few years back. Like I want to see that fight because it's going to be so fucking weird. And you know some weird bullshit finish is going to happen. And it's just going to be a spectacle, like Kimbo fights. Like every Kimbo fight was awesome. You know what I mean? Everyone was memorable. You remember all of them, just because they don't look like professional fights. And I kind of feel like that's going to be what Chuck and Tito look like at this point.
No, I'm with you. I think some of that probably comes from like our background is like pro wrestling fans first. So we've always been probably. What got us into MMA was probably not what gets a lot of people into it today. You know, there's going to probably be a lot of people just like, they love the pure sporting aspect. And I love the sport of it all too, obviously. But I really, like, look, I love Pride and all this stuff. And I never, you know, was unhappy or angry if Pride did something crazy and weird. And I just thought, yeah, no, this is cool. Like, I like seeing this stuff. It doesn't upset me. And I kind of miss it in my life. And I'm kind of coming to terms with how unfulfilled I've been.
UFC lightweight Kevin Lee said $100,000 jiu-jitsu match with Bellator welterweight Dylan Danis is a real thing, and he's working to make it happen. Danis issued the challenge. Lee said, "I'm still waiting to hear back. I know his people reached out to mine. I said I'll take it."
What the fuck is that?
I don't know. but it's off now.
Yeah, I saw this, and I am like, I don't know what's going on. Because, I mean, that's a lot of money. And Dylan Danis is legit. You know, like, Kevin Lee's obviously really good on the ground, too. Like, I've been singing his praises. I really like the way he grapples in MMA. But jiu-jitsu grappling is so different. And I don't know what he's thinking here, but hey, maybe he's just thinking I'm a boss. I'm going to beat this motherfucker. Or who knows? It's probably never going to happen. This is what a weird thing to do. Who wants to put up $100,000 that you can do jiu-jitsu better than one person? What the fuck? Do you have so much money in your life? Are you so bored that this is how you get your thrills? That you're putting up your own money. It's not like you're trying to win some promoter who's sitting there thinking, hey, I can make some money off of pay-per-view. No, you're just betting on it. You're not even getting $100,000 from him. You just put up your own money.
Yeah. Lee said, Danis said, we'll put it on our Instagram story. That seems a little too small to me. That we have to figure out, but it will just be me and him probably in a room. We'll put it on YouTube or something.
I mean, there's like 1,000 different grappling tournament thingies and like all over the place. These events, Meta Morris and Eddie Bravo. I'm sure you can find one, guys. There's jiu-jitsu tournaments every weekend. Just go there, all right?
League claims he threw around Danis when they previously rolled in Las Vegas and he'll do the same on camera. But even if he doesn't, only his pride would sting. I grapple every day, he said. What am I going to do, lose? I don't give a shit. It's 100 G's. I'm going to be pissed, but it is what it is.
I'm kind of with you. Like, hey, everybody loses. This is part of life. But however, most of us, when we lose and we fight to another day, we're not coming off a $100,000 loss. Also, you don't have to put up $100,000. I don't know where that number came from. You could have started with like $10,000 or something. You could have started small.
It's probably Danis. It's probably Connor's money anyway. Yair Rodriguez.
I love that. I love the idea that Conor McGregor is so wealthy that he just pays his friends to fight for his own amusement. Like he's the emperor and gladiator.
Maybe he sees Lee as like a problem at 155. So he's going to have like Danis like break his arm or something.
That would be a hell of a storyline. It's a hell of a build.
He'll be like, if you break his arm, you win $100,000 from him, and I'll match it too. And it's like, all right. He's an assassin. He's going to start picking off all the top contenders at 155 in grappling matches. And then eventually people will catch on and be like, that's really weird. Dylan Danis is breaking all these guys' arms in UFC at lightweight. Weird.
Yeah, it was just kind of – nobody was really sure what technique it was where you just kick the guy in the cock in a grappling match, but he just did it.
And
when he threw the monsoul powder or whatever the fuck it is in the guy's eyes, that was uncalled for. And he threw the fireball. Oof, that was weird.
Sad news. Yair Rodriguez is out of his UFC 228 fight against ZM Punk Zabit Magomed Sharipov. This is the fight that Yair refused originally and got fired for. And then he was rehired, took this fight, and now he's injured and can't fight Magomed Sharipov again.
I'm sure he's probably really injured, but I wonder if it's like a WCW injury. Or, you know, like they just showed
like he
up
had
and
a fake
like,
heart attack.
Oh, no. I was thinking more like the old Lloyd's of London scam where you just show up and like, yeah, no, I'm injured. And they're like, and they take a look at you like, oh my gosh, how are you alive? Meanwhile, you're just a pro wrestler. You're just taking pain pills and stuff like that. But I got nothing.
Do you remember that story where Kevin Nash, he was supposed to do a job for Big Show, and he didn't show up at the show because he said he had a heart attack? And like he didn't even have a heart attack? That was like always the best excuse not to do a job.
When I was in third grade, I think it was. It wasn't me. It was my brother. Or was it me? I don't know. One of us. My mom tells the story. I was in grade school, and I called home because I was sick, and I wanted my mom to come pick me up.
And the thing that was wrong with me was my heart hurt. That's all I, that's like somehow my brain was just like, well, hearts are important. I mean, tell her my heart hurt. She can't say no to that. She left me at school.
Yeah. Brandon Davis is stepping in to fight Zabit on short notice.
That's a brave man.
Yeah, he's 9-4 and just won a fight on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series.
Still, man. Jeez Louise, I know that you're going to earn points with Dana and all this stuff, but that's a badass motherfucker to screw around with. But hopefully he doesn't die.
Yoel Romero's also injured. I think he's got an eye issue or something. Something with his face. Got to figure it out. But
I think he's just ugly. Wouldn't that be a twist to the story? It turns out Yoel Romero is not, in fact, injured. He's just ugly. Imagine being so ugly that people think you're injured. You're just, nope, just born this way. Thanks.
Paulo Costa was supposed to fight Yoel, and now he says he's just going to wait for Yoel to get healthy again. That's the fight he wants, which is interesting because that's probably the last fight he should want.
I kind of get it, though, because that's such a big fight for him.
Mm-hmm.
And look, he's undefeated. And at a certain point, you know, as I like to say, at some point, you just got to be able to go out there and fight. If you can't beat the guy, you can't beat the guy. You know, you got to fight the best. Might as well go for it.
Yeah. Romero's scary.
If you're not going to try to fight the best, you really just shouldn't be fighting. Yeah. Like, I know, like, this sounds kind of dumb. Like, I'm not saying, like, your life is meaningless without it, but if you don't have the mindset that you are really the best in the world, I don't think cage fighting is the place to kind of like have second thoughts about your skills.
Yeah. I just don't, I think it's a little early for old Paulo Costa to fight Yoel at this stage in his career, but whatever.
It'll probably never happen.
He's going to wait until it does. Speaking of bad injuries, Kid Yamamoto has cancer.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's a hell of an injury.
That is. That'll take the wind out of your sails.
Is it ball cancer?
Let me find out. He did an Instagram post, which is in Japanese. I can't read it. It's like... Oh. What are those called?
Kanji.
Is that really what it is?
K-A-N-J-I, kanji.
What are hieroglyphics are the Egyptians on the pyramids, right?
Yes, you racist. They're different continents.
No, but I couldn't think of the word. I was thinking hieroglyphics was what kanji was called. What's it called when they write with, like, the paintbrushes on the scrolls? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Whatever. Chinky righty. Whatever. What? I dated an Asian. I got immunity. My brother's married to one.
One day I'll have nieces and nephews or half breeds. It's fine.
It's so weird. They
Samoa
don't,
Joe.
This article doesn't provide a translation of.
Can't you just cut and paste it into Google Translate?
Oh, I don't know. Can I?
Okay, let me rephrase that. You have the ability to do that if you'd like.
All right, hang on.
I mean, poor Kid Yamamoto. He always had, like, my favorite. His nickname, one of his many nicknames, like, his father's nickname was the God of Wrestling in Japan. And his sisters were these world champion, multiple-time world champion amateur wrestlers and came from this family. And so I remember reading once that his nickname in Japanese was the Son of God. And I always thought, what a badass nickname. And then I stopped and went, probably couldn't get away with that one over here in America, could you though? You know, I'm Mike, Son of God, Coughlin. I don't think it would fly. But I guess in Japan, because they don't really have Jesus, so it's cool.
Isn't Yoel's nickname like Soldier of God or something?
Yeah, Soldier of God. That's fine. Oh, no, okay.
Something like that, right?
Rampage was God's street soldier. And Yoel's, I think, God's soldier, something like that. Soldier of God, yeah, whatever. Like, you can be a soldier of God. That's fine. That's not disrespectful. Calling yourself a son of God, that's a little blasphemous.
This says, few details are known outside of his diagnosis and an apparent promise to return to fighting. Google Translate says, he wrote on Instagram, although it will be a personal report, I will do my best to treat cancer. I am absolutely energetic and I strongly want to return. So please give me a warm support.
Well, his grammar sucks. That's right. Really...
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know what cancer causes bad grammar. But...
Yeah. He hadn't fought since 2015. He's 41 now.
He's 41?
Yeah.
Wow. He's been just like an irrelevant fighter for so long.
What, I mean, at one point he was one of like the best smaller fighters in the world. He was fighting like bigger dudes, right?
At one point he was like arguably pound for pound the best in the world. He was incredible. But I think some of that was also a lack of appreciation probably for how the sport had changed a lot. And that, you know, he was always this natural 125 pounder. He would go up there and beat guys. Like, he beat Genki Sudo and some of these guys at 155 pounds. But I think when you look at it, some of the stuff in hindsight, and I don't want to totally discredit him because he had some incredible wins in Shooto before he was ever popular. But I do think that some of that was, you know, just a different generation, and these guys really weren't that good because as soon as he fought the Americans or the Westerners, he just lost. And also, he destroyed his knee. That probably helped. That probably hurt him a lot. Yeah, it ruined your knee. That does hurt your fighting.
It can. I mean,
or his culture is weak. One of those.
He started his career off at 17-1. That was up till New Year's Eve 07. Then he didn't fight again until May of 09. So he took a year and a half off and lost to Joe Warren by split decision.
He took the time off to try to make the Olympic wrestling team.
That's right. That's right.
And he blew out his knee in training. Like, he won his first match or something like that. And he got injured, kept going through it. Then he came back and he kind of came back against Joe Warren. And Warren was set up for him to be the, you know, an impressive, easy win because he had all these credentials, but he never fought. Then Warren just out toughed him. Mm. And then Kid Yamamoto never won again.
Yeah, it's funny too because he debuted in the UFC against Demetrius Johnson in 2011. Like in retrospect, what a dream match that like nobody really cared about at the time because DJ didn't have the name. And Yamamoto was coming off a couple losses and people thought he was washed up, his knee was blown out. But like in retrospect, that's like a dream fight if it happened at the right time and they were both in their primes.
Yeah, that's the problem. Like, I remember after that fight was over, I was like so, I don't want to say confused, that's not the right word, but like Demetrius Johnson was so much better and he was just out wrestling with ease and everything. He was just like, wow, Yamamoto really sucks. Probably didn't suck as much as I thought he did at the time, but
it's like anybody when you face that level of competition, it's like it just happens. Who's the little steroid guy who was like undefeated for 20 fights? He was the Bellator middleweight champ.
Hector Lombard.
Yeah. It's like a guy like him, he looks like a killer, he's unbeatable. Then he steps up and gets into the UFC and he's losing to Tim Boesch.
Yeah, it's I always liked that. I liked when the unstoppable killers lose to... I can't lie. I don't care about the unstoppable killers losing. I just like watching a black guy lose to a white guy.
Interesting.
Is it? I think it would be racist, but interesting. It's also a possibility.
Upcoming fights, we've got Tony Ferguson versus Anthony Showtime Pettis at UFC 229 on October 6th. Interesting. That's also the same date as Conor Khabib, I believe.
Yeah.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I guess Tony healed.
Yeah, what a freak.
And, I mean, really? Anthony Pettis?
He's coming off that win against the guy, Chiesa.
what is with, I guess Dana White gets certain guys in his head or whatever, but nothing against Anthony Pettis, but he's essentially getting a title shot. What? Like, why? He beat Michael Chiesa. It's like his only win forever. Anthony Pettis is not a good fighter anymore. This is a huge mismatch. This shouldn't be happening. The commission shouldn't allow this. Also, how insulting to fucking Tony Ferguson. You go out there, you're the interim champion, and now you're fighting on the undercard of the guy you were the interim champion for, who's since been stripped of his championship, as this other guy got a championship. The guy that you were supposed to fight, except for that guy, couldn't make weight when you guys were scheduled to fight. What the fuck? How is Tony Ferguson he's the only guy of those three that should have a title. Conor hasn't fought in forever, and Khabib didn't even make weight when he was supposed to fight Tony. And now Tony's fighting Anthony Pettis.
And Khabib beat Ally Quinta to win his championship.
I don't know. I think I'd probably be more impressed with an Anthony Pettis win, to be honest.
Apparently, Ferguson and Pettis have some sort of beef, I guess. On Instagram, Ferguson wrote, your team tried to dog my squad in the stands at UFC 181, and my coach at the time told me, don't worry about him. You can't big league a big leaguer. I told you I'd see you soon, kid. Now you're going to have to answer to me toe-to-toe, Vato. I'll accept a public apology before the fight if you want to squash it and fight like gentlemen. Either way, I'm bringing the pain. So I'll see you soon, hombre. Shh. Be good, pretty boy. Tiene suerte. No S, UFC 229. Shout out to the good coaches and trainers out there making a difference. Happy training.
Yeah, his nickname's El Kukui. Although Ferguson doesn't sound very Mexican-y. That feels like the kind of like Spanish I would drop in, like if I'm like trying to insult him, and I'd be doing it like in the kind of like Roddy Piper racist way, like, yeah, get ready, hombre. And meanwhile, he's just like saying this stuff like, I don't, is that how people talk? Is that a thing? I don't know. I'm not sure if I should be aware of this. Grow up. I mean, you've been gotten to. Who admits that they've been angry at holding this secret grudge for all these years against Anthony Pettis? He's a loser.
Anthony Pettis says he told Ariel Helwani that he's gotten past his mental block.
Sure, yeah, one fight will do it, you asshole.
In other big fight news, we have a rematch that everyone's been clamoring for. Curtis Blaydes versus Francis Ngannou 2. This time in UFC at UFC Beijing on November 24th.
When I saw this, I'm just dumbfounded. What the fuck? Why is this happening? What do we do to deserve this?
I think because they're ranked third and fourth in the division.
Great. So because Josh Gross's buddies said something is the case, now these guys have to fight again.
We also have Robbie Lawler versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson on the January debut show for ESPN.
I understand their thought process, but that's the worst idea. Why would you want to put your best foot forward and you put Stephen Thompson on TV? What, was Machida not available?
No, he's not Bellator.
He's not available, actually. So, yeah, they had to go with why would you do that? Like, Robbie Lawler? I do like that Robbie Lawler was the first fight that the UFC ever put on Fox. That would be the first fight they ever put on the ESPN. Like, every time every couple of decades, they just look at, they're like, all right, we need somebody to go out there and just take an ass kicking. Robbie, let's go.
Not a lot of big shows this weekend with Labor Day, I'm guessing. There is a PFL show on Friday, though.
Awesome.
At the Ocean Resort Casino in Atlantic City. The show was supposed to be headlined by a Johnny Case versus Jason High fight, but High missed weight by 4.5 pounds, and that fight has been pulled from the card. So now your new headliner is Schmelrino Rama versus Jamie Abdallah at 205 pounds.
Are those men?
Yes.
That's too bad.
I would the women's much light the... heavyweight division.
Like, look, it's a PFL. Why not?
That would be good.
Yeah, okay, I want to see that. I want to see.
I think we've talked about that before. The women's heavyweight division is pretty good. There was like some like mini documentary on like the number one ranked women's heavyweight I saw like 5 or 6 years ago. It's pretty funny. Shouldn't have a lot of competition.
I was gonna say, I just feel like it's just. It's basically just this big Bertha type of chicken, probably in Florida, walking around saying, I'm the best in the world, the 205 pounds. And like, she's beat up a couple of chicks and on camera. And everybody's just like, I don't know, it's probably about as good as we've got. Yeah, sure, you're the best. Anybody wants to fight her? And there's just some diabetic who's just like, I'll do it.
Yeah, this is the weakest PFL show by far. There's really no names. The only name.
Well, they set such a high standard.
But I think guys are getting hurt and or missing weight.
You're telling me that this tournament isn't going to – all these tournaments aren't going to go well?
No. No, usually they don't. But, like, the only name I – well, there's two, I guess. Sean O'Connell and Paul Bradley. Like
– Paul like, Bradley still around?
Yeah. Like, I could probably pick them out of a lineup. But the rest of this card, couldn't tell you a single fighter on it.
There's no chance in hell I could pick Paul Bradley out of a lineup.
I feel like he's white with short hair.
Exactly. Exactly.
There's also a Invicta on September 1st, which would be Sunday?
Yeah.
This also sounds very weak. The main event is Jandaroba versus Mirandon.
Yeah.
Verna Jandaroba, who's 13-0, versus Janessa Morandon. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
The third fight from the top has a woman who's never fought before.
Why? It's always good to give people their big break.
Pearl Gonzalez, I've heard of her.
Yeah, got big old titties.
Oh, was she one of the ones? Did she almost get pulled from New York?
Yep.
Yeah.
Trains out of Chicago somewhere.
Yeah. Not a big weekend for MMA.
No. Well, they don't want to go toe-to-toe with the other big events, so.
Like what?
All In.
Oh, I forgot. Will you be attending?
I'll be around. I'm not going to the fucking show.
What? You're just too busy? You have too much going on?
No, I have nothing to do.
If I lived near Boston, I would go. Boston? I do live near Boston. If I lived near Chicago, I would have gone to that show.
It's not even that, dude. It's in Hoffman Estates. It's like at the Sears Center. It's not even in the city. It's out in a suburb, so it's like really easy for me to get to. I'm still not going.
Interesting. I'd just be curious to see it and see what the crowd was like, but I'm just a more inquisitive person than you, I guess.
Yeah, I'm always telling people that.
Did you hear about the woman who lost her NASA internship over a vulgar tweet?
I did, actually.
Every time I read this, it makes me laugh and laugh. On Wednesday, user Naomi H underscore official excitedly announced her new job offer. In all caps, she wrote, "Everyone shut the fuck up. I got accepted for a NASA internship." Her big news caught the eye of former NASA engineer Homer Hickam, who commented "language" underneath her tweet. Just wrote one word, "language." Naomi then replied, "Suck my dick and balls. I'm working at NASA." That's when Hickam 75 revealed his identity. "I am on the National Space Council that oversees NASA," Hickam wrote.
And then she lost the internship.
Yes.
I mean, I get it. Everybody
be careful what you say online. It's fine. But did they really have to take this? Like, she's super excited, right? Like, she's getting to work for NASA.
Yeah.
Now, I guess if you're so stupid that you don't know what's going on with NASA, maybe they don't want you. But still, like, I kind of like the girl was excited. The internet's awful.
It is. But at the same time, it's like, what? Why would you write back, suck my dick and balls, I'm working at NASA? Like, she didn't, like, write at NASA or anything. But at the same time, it's like, if I just got a job somewhere, I wouldn't be like, suck my dick and balls. Like, it's funny if a girl's writing that, it's different. Like, I get that. But at the same time, it's just, like, so dumb.
It's a bit of a disconnect.
Yeah.
It's like as a man that says a lot of dumb things, mm-hmm. you would never see me say something like, suck my dick and balls, I'm working for the Supreme Court. Like, huh? Like, I don't think you're going to be working there very long if you're walking around talking about your dick and balls there, pal.
I'm trying to think. It's totally different if it's a guy versus a girl saying it. So I don't know what the equivalent would be. But it's like,
but even, no matter what, I wouldn't be like, kiss, suck my asshole, I'm working for the Supreme Court or something. Like, milk my titties, I'm working for the Supreme Court. Okay, actually, that would be kind of funny. I would be a little disappointed if Ginsburg didn't go along with the milk my titties, I'm working for the Supreme Court. That's my new favorite phrase in the whole world. Make milk my titties, I'm working for the Supreme Court.
Naomi and Hickam's conversation was deleted. Hickam later revealed that Naomi lost her internship in a blog post that has since been deleted, but was previously obtained by BuzzFeed. He said, I had nothing to do with, nor could I, since I do not hire and fire at the agency or have any say on employment whatsoever. So this wasn't Hickam's decision. If anything, he was like, when he wrote language, it was more like, somebody might see this and you could get in trouble. He didn't reveal who he was or anything. And then
that's
she
not made, why he did it.
I don't know.
He wasn't looking out for her. He was just...
You think he was trolling her and hoping she would say, suck my dick and balls?
I think he was just kind of like, language lady. Like, you know, I don't think he was being mean. I don't think that he was like, hey, I'm just looking out for you.
He said he deleted his comments. As it turned out, NASA saw the NASA... It was a hashtag. She did hashtag NASA.
Oh, jeez.
Her friends... As it turned out, it was due to the NASA hashtag her friends used that called the agency's attention to it long after my comments were gone. So it had nothing to do with this guy, but her friends were doing, like, in the comments, hashtag NASA. And that's what drew their attention, I guess.
Okay. Like, I'm just glad that... I guess I'm glad that I'm the person that draws attention to people, and I never have to worry that people are drawing attention to me.
Hickam said she reached out to me with an unnecessary apology, which I heartily accepted in return with my own. After talking to her, I am certain she deserves a position in the aerospace industry, and I'm doing all I can to secure her one that will be better than the one she lost. I have also talked to the folks that had to do with her internship and made absolutely certain there will be no black mark on her record.
So this is really a story about the nicest man in the world. What an awesome dude. Like, seriously, that's how we should all treat people. He gets it. He went out of his way to make sure this girl's life is not ruined by this, because it really could be. What an awesome guy. I hope he writes a book I can buy someday. I won't read it, but I'll buy it.
So you went from thinking he might have been a dick for writing language on Twitter to him being the best guy ever?
Yeah. When the facts change my opinion.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I'm very open-minded like that. People are always saying how open-minded I am.
Which people?
Intelligent people.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird.
You wouldn't know anything about them, but they're out there.
Yeah, I don't socialize with any of them. Cardi B joked about Martin Luther King Jr.'s infidelity, and his children were not amused.
Yeah, I always think it's kind of fucking funny too, but whatever.
Apparently she did some skit on the real, I don't even know what this is. The concept of the civil rights themed comedy sketch was simple. Whether it was funny or just plain offensive remains in the eye of a growing number of outraged beholders. In the sketch, an unaired clip was shared by TMZ and posted on YouTube called The Real Housewives of the Civil Rights Movement. They get together to plan a rally for Martin Luther King Jr. because, as one says, nothing can go wrong for Martin in Memphis. But in reality, the skit from the show, Off the Rip, which doesn't have a network or a premiere date, was jokes about King's infidelities. Rapper Cardi B played King's widow, Coretta Scott King, and delivered the key punchline. All these hussies want to sleep with my husband, she said in the sketch, but it's okay because I know he marches home to me.
Not bad. Not a bad line. King, kind of dumb.
King's children were not amused, especially because the video spread on the 55th anniversary of the March on Washington and the civil rights leaders' I Have a Dream speech.
Yeah, I always love these people like this have their priorities way out of fucking whack here. Like, you're upset that they made a joke about your dad being a cheater. Why don't you be upset at him? He's the guy that did it. Well, you think it's rude that they're bringing up the part where your dad cheated on your mom a lot and abused their trust and violated their sacred duties and oaths to one another? Oh, yeah, but Cardi B is the problem here. What I'm saying is Martin Luther King Jr. sucks. And he's a jerk. And he didn't like gays either.
Martin Luther King's son, Martin Luther King III, lashed out at Cardi B and TMZ, saying, "Today I'm at the Mexican border addressing families and children that are being separated. Important issues. And yet TMZ and others choose to deal with the superficial. First of all, that's not my mom. My mom didn't talk like that. So it's all fictitious kind of garbage. And the unfortunate part is that young people look up to these artists and believe that whatever you put on television is truth."
No, I don't think anybody believes that that's your mom. I think everybody understands what a joke is. And I assure you, no one will ever remember Cardi B. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I might always remember Cardi B doing Coretta Scott King. But also, again, yeah, your dad cheated on her a lot. Your dad's a dick. Your dad absolutely abused women. By every modern standard, your dad was a walking Me Too movement. Did a lot of real great things for people. I get that and all that, but the dude was a dick to women.
Hey, nobody's perfect.
No, it's true. Look, I'm sorry. If all I ever have to fucking hear every day about every fucking founding father is like, oh, you know, he owned slaves. Like, we always have to talk about the negatives of my people. Well, I'm sorry. You got the blacks. You finally got an awesome one. We're going to knock him down too. That's just the way it goes in America. Nobody gets anything fun. No sacred cows. Unless you're vegan.
Speaking of the Me Too movement, Louis C.K. Had his first stand-up gig, I believe, yesterday. I don't know if he was like an open mic or what, but he is back out in public 9 months after he admitted to jerking off in front of women against their will in dressing rooms.
Yeah, and people are... As far as I can tell, Louis C.K. did a bunch of dick things. Like, it was a real, he had a real problem with it. He's an asshole or whatever.
Yeah.
He does seem to have apologized for it. My problem with these people that are upset with him performing, and it's kind of my problem with a lot of this, is that I don't take you seriously if you can't tell me what he needs to do in order for this to be okay.
Right.
Don't tell me that he shouldn't be out here. Okay, that's fine. How long do they have to wait? What does he have to do to get back in your good graces? Because if you don't have an answer for that, then you're not somebody to be listened to. You can't, like, I'm sorry, you do not need to engage with people who are that irrational. Because all they're saying is basically, I don't like this, and it's going to go on forever. And if you think that he can never come back, I'm also not going to engage with you, because that's just not how the fucking world works. I'm sorry. You make a mistake, you make a bunch of mistakes, you get a second chance. That's life.
Right.
If we're just going to destroy, if everybody's going to be gone over something, then it's insane. Now, you should be punished. There's all kinds of stuff to be done. And I think especially like somebody like Louis C.K., he didn't really rape it. What he did wasn't cool. it's not cool or anything like that. But
yeah.
Oh no, he whacked off in front of people. This isn't. Close your eyes and the whole problem's over.
I think there was more to it too. Like some of those comedians or whatever claim they got like blackballed and they want to tell people about it, but everybody, all these other comedians were like, "Shut up, don't say anything." And then some of them are claiming they were coerced into not talking about it. So I don't know the whole story. Either way, who like just starts, you mind if I beat off in front of you? Who the fuck does that? And comes from somebody who's seen like Louis C.K. four times live and fucking love the guy. But at the same time, like I can see both sides of this one. But at the same time, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like who does like.
It absolutely fits.
That doesn't
even
cross anyone's mind.
But it does seem like something he would do. As soon as I heard that, I'm just like, oh, I totally believe that. Yeah, I totally. Like, if you told me, like, I don't know, Bill Burr did that, I'd be like, oh, I'm disappointed. Like, Bill, like, you see, like, but like Louis C.K. or like Doug Stanhope, I'd be like, yeah. Louis is just kind of an awkward, weird dude. He doesn't get along with women. Like, total weird thing. But I don't know. You do it once and. I don't know how it works. I don't get it. I don't have the urge to. Well, I do, but I don't get caught. But it's a thing, and it's a dick. It's a real dick thing what he did, and I'm fine if people want to say he needs to be punished for X time. Mm-hmm. You just got to tell me what it is,
right?
Is there something you
think you should do? Like I don't even know what it would be.
I have no idea.
Uh-huh.
Like if I really had to like sit there and like come up with like what is the standard for getting back, and the problem is that I more or less think like if somebody is genuinely repentant for what they did wrong, I tend to just be like, okay, like if you said you're sorry, I don't know what else you can do.
Right.
Like I know it's real frustrating because people get hurt and sometimes people get damaged and it's not fair that they suffer still and the other person doesn't.
Right. But
if you say you're sorry, I don't know. If you want to give them money, they sue them for their emotional distress or whatever. We already have a system in place for that. Right. That has addressed all of this. So outside of legal penalties, I don't know if the guy's really sorry and it's like, okay, if he's not really sorry, I'm probably going to be like, okay, I don't like the guy.
Right. So he wrote that apology letter. We don't know if he's done anything else, but like if he said something like, oh, I went to counseling, or, you know, I talked to other guys who jerk off in front of women and told them it wasn't right. Like some sort of like reach. I don't know what the equivalent, like John Jones going to all the schools talking about not doing drugs, like something similar, except for guys who beat off in public, I guess.
Well, we used to just have him go on Oprah. And we need an Oprah. We really do. Like, we need some sort of like national black auntie that like tells everybody, yeah, all right, we sat down, we had a talk, he knows what happened, it's all good. Because I don't like, you know, like, oh, you got to go and make the rounds and publicly prostrate yourself and all that. Like, I don't like that shit. Oh, my fucking calf is cramping up. Oh, son of a bitch.
I guess what I'm saying. Stretch it out.
Oh,
rub it.
Oh, God. Oh, God. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. Okay. Oh, I fucking hate this. Oh, this has happened to me in a long time. I haven't been drinking as much water as I need to. This is horrible. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to somebody. Oh, gosh. Damn it. It's getting fucking worse. Oh, you cocksuck. Oh, God. Oh, fuck me. It's really fucking cramping. Oh, I continue. I can do this.
You gotta just change positions.
No, I don't. I don't know what I gotta do. I gotta just. Fuck me. Usually I kind of stretch it out and it goes, okay.
If you were Louis C.K.'s agent, Would you have suggested not telling a rape whistle joke on your first spot back?
No, actually, I think that he's got to go for it. Like, I really do think that on some level, you got, like, look, it's comedy.
Right.
And part of, especially his comedy, part of his comedy is just being super raw and open about it. And I don't know how exactly. I'm not as talented as Louis C.K., unfortunately. But, you know, people have been kind of waiting for this, and he's going to figure it out. He's going to figure out, like, the way to get back in people's graces, because the truth is he's a likable guy. You know, people want to root for him, and so he'll come back, and people are going to get angry, and I'm just going to slowly grow more and more desensitized to it all. At least my leg feels better.
That's a plus.
God, that hurt.
If you had to guess why a linebacker in the NFL got in trouble with the law, what would your first guess be?
Insider trading.
Fuck.
Look, the guy plays for the fucking Browns. Of course he had to do something.
Federal authorities announced Wednesday that Cleveland Browns linebacker Michael Michelle Kendricks and TV writer-producer Damilar Sanoki have been indicted on insider trading charges. U.S. attorney said in a news conference that Kendricks allegedly received non-public information about corporate mergers in 2014 from Sanoki, who was an employee at Goldman Sachs at the time. Kendricks then used that information to invest in the companies that were about to be acquired, McQueen said, and made approximately $1.2 million in profit.
I saw this pop up on the ESPN app or whatever, and it said something like he apologized for what he did.
Mm.
And that's all I saw. And I just thought, he's probably so stupid that he really does think he's just like, oh, sorry, didn't know what I was doing. And everybody's just going to go, yeah, nobody really thinks that this moron was engaged in serious insider trading here. However, he has since been released by the Browns. So,
oops. Authorities allege that Kendricks gave Sanoki, who later left the bank and became a writer for the ABC series Blackish, a series of kickbacks ranging from cash to tickets to NFL games. Kendricks played for the Eagles at the time. In a statement through his attorney provided to USA Today, Kendricks admitted to participating in insider trading and apologized to the Browns, Eagles, and the NFL. While I didn't fully understand all the details of the illegal trades, I knew it was wrong, and I wholeheartedly regret my actions.
So weird when you see guys that obviously he's worth more than $1.2 million. Like, you know, I don't understand why people commit crimes that aren't worth it. It makes sense to do insider trading if you're going to become like a billionaire. Like, yeah, I'd do that, but.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like the more and more I see stuff, it's like you never have enough money and you just spend differently and live differently. Like so many people don't live within their means. And it's like, I don't know, the guy probably made some bad investments and was hurting for money and screwed up somehow and found this guy and thought it would be a quick fix. I don't know.
He's so weird, though, because you would think, you know, again, if he's looking to make $1 million, to play football.
Right.
He's got to play a couple games. Like, it's always weird to me when you see people that realistically could live a very comfortable, not extravagant, a very comfortable life forever and never with the money they have. And yet they, like, all you have to do is they have like $1 million in the bank. That's it. You can live off that interest for the rest of your life and be fine. And these morons don't do it. They're not content with the simple life like people like I am. You know, I'm more in touch with things, I guess.
Speaking of morons, a man was killed Saturday when he tried to traverse a railroad crossing by rolling under a moving train. At about 4:30 p.m., the man approached the tracks and apparently got impatient, Lieutenant Russ Amott said. The pedestrian apparently surveyed the moving train for a few moments before trying to roll underneath it and come out on the other side.
4:30 in the afternoon is really, it's kind of early to be that drunk.
He did not make it. Amat said the freight train dragged the man's body and he died. Police have not identified the man, but they said he appears to be in his 30s. Amat said police don't know if the man was intoxicated.
Oh, I do. You know, sometimes you got to catch a train, though.
Like, when I picture a train, I don't picture myself being able to fit underneath it.
I assume I could, because it feels like something they do in movies. But I don't want to trust myself to roll underneath it.
That's usually they're on top of the train, like running on top of it. They're rarely trying to sneak underneath it.
Well, the smart ones are. You just got to be a properly placed hobo.
I like when I find these things, like it's the Salt Lake Tribune, like news site. And like one of the top, like most searched for articles, like LDS Democrats bewildered by their church's stance on medical marijuana initiative, bemoan alarmist tone.
Mormons are big consumers of marijuana. It's true. I'm not joking. I'm pretty sure. Wait, maybe it's not marijuana. Maybe it's pills. Like there's something, it's something that Mormons like partake in a lot. Like, because they don't drink and they can't do the other one, but either they smoke a lot of weed or they take a lot of pills.
It's pretty good.
It's a very interesting religion.
Trump says U.S. did a fantastic job in Puerto Rico after Maria. He's going to be the only person in the world who says that.
I kind of like that. I mean, I know what he's saying, and it's not like we would all say it, but the United States did a pretty good job in Puerto Rico. It's like nobody said, like, the United States did a pretty good job in Louisiana.
Members of a family in Northern Virginia fell ill and needed hospital attention after eating a meal containing wild mushrooms picked near their apartment complex.
I mean, this farm-to-table thing is getting out of control.
Yard-to-table.
I've been better, yeah.
The Washington Post reported Wednesday that they experienced vomiting and stomach pains for a few hours after eating the mushrooms. Fairfax County fire officials say poison control and crews from the fire department scoured around the Annandale apartment complex, finding mushrooms in a courtyard in a bid to identify them. For confirmations, they sent pictures of the mushrooms to the family members as they were being treated at the hospital. The mushrooms are known as chlorophyllum molybdates, or green spored lepiota, also known as the vomiter. Officials say the mushrooms are a severe gastrointestinal irritant when eaten, but do not cause liver failure or death.
Well, I mean, with a name like the vomiter, you should probably see it coming.
Who in their right mind just wanders out into like their condominium complex, like the courtyard, and starts eating mushrooms that are growing like from the fucking foundation, like in this moist, wet spot, puddle, nasty rainwater where dogs have been pissing for the last month?
Drug addicts?
I never think of that.
But that's exactly what it is.
I assume that people aren't on drugs, but
you
are
not. You don't think like a drug user at all. Like I'm 100% sitting there thinking, well, you'd investigate the mushrooms and see if they could be consumed. You'd cross reference it and check it, but I mean, you know, drugs are drugs.
If I see like a wild mushroom like it in the woods or something, not that I'm in the woods a lot, but the last thing on my mind would be like, oh, I should try and eat that. It's like
that's literally the first thing that it's on my mind.
See, I look at it like it's a fungus and it's probably poison.
Well, it is poison. Drugs are poison. That's why they do what they do to your body. It just turns out that I like the poison, man.
No, I mean poison in a way that's not going to get you high. It's just going to get you sick.
Man, sometimes being sick is the ultimate high.
It's a good t-shirt. This is a good restaurant story I enjoyed. I came across on a site called the New York Post. A California man is facing 10 felony counts for allegedly sneaking out on dates just before the waiter brings the check, authorities said Monday. Paul Guadalupe Gonzalez, 45, set up dates across Southern California and would enjoy the meals before he'd disappear. Eight women purportedly ended up paying the bill themselves, one in the belief that the defendant was going to pay her back, while in two other instances, the restaurants picked up the check. ABC News reported that it tried repeatedly to contact Gonzalez, but could not reach him. It is unclear if he has a lawyer.
I feel like I've heard of like people doing this, but it was always in like some cliched, like nobody would really do, like an urban legend type of thing.
Well, he was reportedly taken into custody on Saturday. If convicted, he faces up to 13 years in state prison. He pleaded not guilty to extortion, grand theft, and other charges. Gonzalez is accused of defrauding the women of nearly $1,000. CBS Los Angeles spoke to an alleged victim. She said he was good looking, and she thought, why did he choose me? He ordered a salad with shrimp, a filet mignon. Yes, he went all out, she told the station. All of a sudden, he's all, oh, my phone's dying, and I'm waiting on the call from my mom about my aunt. I'm going to go to the car to get my charger. And then my first comment to him when he got up was, oh, what? You're not coming back? She was stuck with a $130 bill, she said. I didn't mention it to the restaurant, nothing. I think I was more embarrassed. My pride was just like, you know, I felt dumb.
Well, he's a horrible person. Like, what a real, it's just such an awful thing to do to people. I don't know why, what's wrong with people? Why do you got to intentionally hurt others? You would just like walk out on the bill. You could just do that yourself. Just go order food and just be like, I'll be right back. I'm going to the bathroom and just leave. You don't have to destroy some person. You know, some chick's got her hopes up. You know, sometimes maybe you build it all up. You go on the date and you think it's going to be great. And then they just shit on you. Yeah, I mean, it's rude.
Yeah, I would say it's pretty rude. I like that this was just like his gimmick and he did it all the time, though. There's something like kind of amusing about that, that like this guy gets off on just eating all this food and then pretending he has to go to the bathroom and just like ghosting on all these women. And he does it repeatedly.
He probably should have just whacked off in front of him. Then he'd be back already.
It's quite the scam he's got going for him.
Such a, seems like so much effort for a free meal. You got to meet women and dress up and go to, like, it's a lot of, that's a lot of work just for a free steak. Like, presumably they know who you are. You know, they're going on a date with you and they've been able to arrest you. He's probably an illegal immigrant. He did something bad and he's in Southern California. Illegal immigrant. Yeah.
Speaking of people from the South, a Colombian man sliced off his nose and mutilated his face to look like a skeleton. Eric Yiner Hincapi Ramirez, 22, has renamed himself Calaca Skull after 2 years worth of extreme surgery. The tattoo artist says he has been obsessed with skulls since childhood, but he got really serious about looking like one when his mom died.
Well, it's part of the grieving process. It's one of the little known later stages. After acceptance comes carving your skull into a new shape for your mother.
You're dead.
I'm sure she should be thrilled. I mean, you could have just maybe got flowers or something like that, but maybe a tattoo. You are a tattoo artist. Seems like a lot of people get mom with a heart. You shaved part of your skull off. I mean, what more could a mother want? I'm sure if you ask your wife right now, hey Beth, what would you like for next Mother's Day? Oh, I really hope that one of the kids could, I don't know, maybe take a little bit off of their earlobes. They're kind of they're bothersome.
I mean, that's the ultimate sign of respect, I think, to cut off parts of your own body. Let's see here. His gruesome procedures include having the bottom half of his nose removed and his earlobes cut off. He split his tongue in two and dyed it gray, then had dark eye sockets permanently inked onto his face. Calica Skull had skeletal teeth shaded around his mouth. He has been slammed in the media and by members of the public back in Colombia for his macabre look.
I was sitting there thinking, like, where the fuck could you possibly find a doctor willing to do this? And just said Colombia. I'm like, all right. Like, seriously. I mean, come on. There's no fucking laws down there.
His Instagram feed is littered with pics of fans greeting him in the street and posing for selfies. He told Rio Noticias website in Colombia, body modifications are a personal decision and should not be judged. It's like judging a woman for getting breast or buttock implants. For me, a skull is like my sister, a part of my family, really. I feel very attached to them.
But I do judge women if they do those things. Like, yeah, I would think you're vain and kind of silly. I mean, if you want to do it, you want to do it. I'm not going to stop you. This is also a little different than that. I mean, just a little. You are, they're just kind of making their butt look nice. You're cutting your nose off your face. That's insane, you know. Don't cut your nose off to spite your face.
Yes.
Like, you're doing it, dude. Like, you heard that and you're just like, I don't really understand what this means at all.
That should be his marketing slogan. I cut my nose off to spite my face. I don't know how that translates in Colombian, but he described being...
Spanish?
No. Okay.
They don't speak Colombian, I know. Do they? That's not a language, right? They
speak Spanish, but...
All right.
I should have said Colombia. He described being transformed into a walking, talking skull as a dream come true. He added, I am a normal person who just happens to look a lot different than most other people. It's like a different way of thinking, of dressing, a different style of music. I just feel good the way I am.
Hey, more power to you, buddy. But you don't get to call yourself normal if you're, by definition, not normal. You can't tell me I just do something completely different than everyone else. I'm normal. No, you're not. Normal is the norm. It means what the average is. You're not normal. You're a man that cut his nose off because he loved his mom.
I think that's pretty much all I've got for this week. Is there anything you would like to discuss here?
No, I'm good.
I'm good. All right. I think I'm good too. Well, there you have it. That was another fun-filled edition of MMA and stuff here on HalfGutted.com.
Scintillating, some might say.
Yes. You can catch the show on HalfGutted or iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, pretty much anywhere. Just
Dude, this show is on platforms I didn't even know existed.
I know. Just search for
MMA. Like, it's like you're being published on such and such. I'm like, what the hell is – who's using this?
I don't know.
So if you're using one of those people, let me know.
Thanks for listening. We will be back next week. Catch you later.